is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
One of the big things that we pride ourselves in also is the decision-making piece of it. So we do drills where they have to make decisions. When we're working with individuals or small groups, whatever, that's a big piece. The thing that I find interesting though sometimes is you can't make a decision if you have no skill.
Joe Stasision has 30-plus years of skill development and coaching experience. He is currently the director of Unleashed Potential, a basketball skill development company based in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. He joined USA Basketball as a player development speaker and clinician at USA Basketball National Academies and regional clinics across the United States. Joe was also formerly the National Director of Basketball and Youth Fitness at 24 Hour Fitness, where he managed programs in over 450 facilities nationwide. This position gave him the opportunity to work with countless elite NBA and WNBA coaches and players. He's also a 20-plus year veteran coach at the Duke University basketball camp, where he has gotten to know and befriend the Duke coaching staff, including assistant coach Chris Carrawell and head coach Mike Krzyzewski. Joe began his career in sports as an assistant coach at Dickinson College and later was the head boys varsity coach at Carlisle High School in Pennsylvania for 10 years. Fall in love with basketball again this February with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Be sure to check out their new Dr. Dish facility model with advanced analytics. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Pete Marion, head men's basketball coach at John Carroll University. And you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Joe Stasision from Unleashed Potential in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. And we are pleased tonight to welcome back to the Hoopheads Podcast for his third appearance, getting up into the upper echelon of guests, Joe Stasision from Unleashed Potential. Joe, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Mike and Jason, man. I really appreciate you guys. I'll tell you what, man, it's been a long couple years. So much has gone on around the world and in the sports world and basketball, and I really appreciate you guys having me on again. I have some great stuff I wanted to share with you guys.
We are excited to be able to have you back on, and hard to believe that we are now more than 3 years removed from when we first got connected through Alan Stein and developed a friendship. It's amazing kind of where we were when we started, when we talked to you the first time, and where we are, where you are. And we're going to dive into all that. So let's start
by just giving people who maybe haven't listened to your other episodes, just give us the brief minute or two rundown sort of on your bio so people have an idea of where this whole thing is coming from. And then we'll dive into some more specifics about your business and how you've grown it and what makes you guys unique.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, yeah, this all started. I was a longtime high school coach here at Carlisle, PA, played at Carlisle, coached here at Carlisle with Coach Dave Lebo. You know, we had Jeff Lebo come through here, who's now the head assistant at UNC with Hubert Davis. We had Billy Owens come through here. My son played for me here at Carlisle and played Division I basketball. And now he's, he pretty much runs Unleashed Potential with us here with our business. But yeah, so I got into player development many years ago, you know, just through coaching high school and all that good stuff. And then eventually, I have a long history with Coach K, which we'll talk about later in the podcast. This being his last year, I wanted to share some great stuff that I've learned from him through the years. And then as far as the player development stuff goes, when I got out of coaching in high school, I had a great opportunity. I was able to be the national director of player development for the largest player development business in the United States. And basically, I was working in every NBA, WNBA city across this country, working with the best of the best. You mentioned Allen Stein. I mean, a lot of the guys that worked under me are now in the NBA in terms of player development coaches and all those kinds of things. And that's a whole story in itself, where I literally ran over 300 facilities and had player development going on in every one of those facilities across the country. And that's what I was doing for a while, for a good 5 years. And like I said, got to work with the best of the best. And I'll be honest, I've said this before, Mike and Jason, I don't know if anybody else, you know, I'm just stating the reality here, has been able to do or been where I've been across the country in such a wide range in terms of development and player development and those kinds of things. So after doing that for 5 years, Jason Williams, who's with ESPN, was working very closely with me. And when the owner of the company passed away, this all went away and he went his way to ESPN. And then I came back to Carlisle and my son and I decided we wanted to run our own player development business here. And it started here, but now it's grown internationally. And now, I'll talk a little bit about USA Basketball through Coach K's recommendation and Kevin Eastman and some other people. And I'm working closely with Don Showalter now. That's something, a big part of what else I do now, besides our Unleashed Potential business. So it started out locally here. You know, I was nationwide. It came back here locally. Now this is spread pretty much nationwide and internationally with what we do. So that's the long short of it, I guess you can say.
If you want to dive into Joe's background a little bit deeper, you can go back and listen to either of his previous two episodes when he was on with us, and you can catch those on our website, hoopheadspod.com, and go back and you can dig more into Joe's backstory and just kind of how he got that stuff started. One of the things that we wanted to talk about tonight is just how the business has gone from, because look, let's face it, Joe, there are a lot of people out there that have hung up a player development shingle and are running a local training business. So how did you guys take it? Now, obviously you had a tremendous amount of experience, which you just mentioned, but beyond that, there's more to it than just being a good basketball trainer. There's obviously some business piece of it and all that kind of thing that goes into being able to allow your business to expand into the ways that you guys have been able to expand it. So just talk a little bit about what's happened maybe over the last year or so that's enabled you guys to continue to grow and have an impact on players in more than just the local Carlisle area.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. And it's funny, Mike, that you asked that because, you know, when I speak nationally for USA Basketball at their basketball academies, coach academies and things like that, and Coach Showalter, you know, he's heard me say this before. You know, I always say there's a player development guy in every street corner, or a skill guy or a trainer, whatever you want to call it. Okay. And I've said through the years, my vast experience, I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'll be honest, I'll tell you what really sums it all up in a couple of words. And it's called production and results. And, you know, a lot of people could say they do this or they do that, but at the end of the day, Do you have parents come back? Do you have teams? Do you have coaches come back and say to you, hey, my kid got better. Our team got better. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. Okay. It's about, you know, making people better and producing results. Results do matter. I mean, you know, and again, you can't, here's what I always say too, that there's two people you can't fool. That's NBA players and kids. So they know when you're BSing or you don't know what you're doing or you don't know what you're talking about. And really, to be honest with you, we haven't even had to advertise. We do not do we don't do any marketing. We don't have to market through word of mouth. This business has grown just unbelievably to the point where, you know, we're doing stuff with the Boston Celtics. You know, we're doing stuff with the Junior Knicks. We're doing stuff with international groups, Canada basketball. We've gone there. I do a camp in Italy every year, but one of the biggest camps in Italy that I'm very fortunate to do. Don Showalter has done it. Alan Stein, Steve Kerr. And I've been asked to do that. And I'm also working with Olympic coaches around the world, which we're going to talk about that a little bit too. But to answer your question, you know, we do small group training. We do large group training. We do programs. We're starting a 3-on-3 program coming up. During the season, we've been doing an in-house shooting program for on the weekends for players who are currently in high school that just want to come in and work on their footwork and work on their technique and get up extra shots, extra reps. They're all different programs that we do. And to be honest with you, one of the biggest things that really separate us from other people is we've developed this hybrid model. I have a lot of vast experience in performance training also through my travels around the country and working with the top performance trainers, Alan Stein being one of them, that we've developed a model where we combine performance training with the player development. And player development, you know, people talk about skill, the difference between skill development and player development. Yeah, there is a difference because player development is much more than just doing drills. Okay, it's decision making. It's working on the mental aspect of the game. It's working on the performance aspect. And we've also developed a competitive edge model where we've taken the things that we're doing, the development that we're doing, and putting players into competitive situations with ball handling, with shooting, with passing, with, you know, all different aspects of basketball performance training. So that is how this thing has really, really grown. We even had recently, we have high school teams that bring us in during the season, and we'll do 1 hour of player development / performance training with the team, and then the coaches will run their practice for another hour after that. So, you know, it used to be when we first started this, and I got back from doing this nationally, that we would be a little bit seasonal. We have a little slower time during the season. Now it's just full on, 7 days a week, every day of the year, every season of the year. It's just full on, and it's just taken off tremendously. And that's, you know, whether we're doing individuals, small groups, programs, teams, international stuff, Junior Celtics, Junior Knicks, what have you. So that's what's been going on.
All right. So staffing wise, you're one guy and you're trying to do all the things that you just talked about. When you look at where you are, just explain to people how you manage the people that work for you. And what that looks like in terms of your responsibility to them and then their responsibility to you. You've obviously already mentioned your son, but go ahead and go through the whole gamut of kind of where you are from a staffing standpoint.
Yeah. So for our business model, we have myself who's on full time. My son is full time. My son actually had a great, he's a former Division I player. And again, you know, some people might say, well, I'm biased, what have you, but I've been everywhere and I've seen everything. He is probably, without a doubt, one of the top player development people in the country just because he knows what he's doing. He does such a great job of teaching the game. So he's full time. His wife, who is a Division III All-American, two-time Division III All-American at Franklin Marshall College here in Pennsylvania. She is also a full-time part of our team. And then we have another part-time guy. So basically what happens is my son handles all the scheduling, you know, and he's really good at what he does. I mean, here's the thing, you know, we're busy every day. And then at night, he's busy 2 or 3 hours at night scheduling all these things that we need to schedule. And then the part-time guy. So at times we may have two people holding down the fort here at our own facility, and then we'll have two of us going on and doing some training. Like right now, coming up in the spring, one of the largest AAU organizations in Pennsylvania, Mid-Penn Motion, they contract us out to do all their skill development for their teams, their AAU teams. We don't pick the teams. We don't coach the teams. We have nothing really to do with that. But we come in and we go to a couple of their practices. They value skill development and player development in their AAU, which is fantastic. It's unheard of today. Not a lot of AAU teams do that. So they bring us in. So a couple of us will go do those, and then a couple of us will stay back, and we just rotate around. And it's really, I mean, we got this thing cranking. My son does a great job of scheduling. And, you know, there's many, many days that we're in the gym 5 and 6 hours. And that's including Sundays also. We try to take Saturdays off when we can. But it's really gotten to that point. And then you mix in what I'm doing with USA Basketball, my role there. And then you mix in, you know, I travel outside a little bit more doing those things. And then my work with the Olympic and national team coaches, which we can get into. We're going to get into a little bit. But, that's just sort of stuff. And then my international stuff on the side, too. And speaking for Canada Basketball, you know, I've done their super clinics. They have me speak at those also.
So how close are you to needing more people?
Oh, we are beyond needing more people. We're to the point now. You know, I can't talk a lot about it right now. We got some stuff in the works right now. This thing is just going to go to a whole nother level very soon. You know, and the hard thing is that I can tell you this from my work when I was national director of basketball across the country. You have to be very, very careful in terms of who you bring on, because they have to have your philosophy. They have to know what they're doing. They need to be able to teach the game the way we teach the game. So it's very, very difficult just to bring somebody on. And I knew that because, you know, like I said, running over 300 facilities, I literally went in and I interviewed people on the floor. And I'm talking, when I say this, I'm talking about former, you know, high major, college basketball players, former WNBA, former NBA All-Stars. I can go on and on and on, where I go in and I literally, you know, interview people, rehearse on the floor, show me how you're going to run a lesson on ball handling, you know, and then have a face-to-face interview and things like that. So, you know, it's very difficult, especially when you're so busy, to be able to train people, bring them into your business and feel comfortable with them doing what, you know, to uphold your brand.
You think trust is the most important thing when you bring somebody in? I mean, obviously there's some technical skills and things that they have to do to be able to interact with players and all that kind of stuff. But I would think that just bringing somebody in and knowing that you can trust them, that they're going to show up, they're going to do the things that they're supposed to do, that they're going to be diligent in what they do. To me, that seems like that would probably be the most important thing you'd be looking for in a trainer, but maybe you have a different thought.
No, you're absolutely right, Mike. I mean, trust is probably one of the biggest things. Bringing on new people, you know, just like when I did, when I ran this whole program nationwide, trust was very, very important to us. Trusting a person that you're bringing on, not only to be a good person, because they're representing you, just like when I was a high school head coach, and I got this from Coach Lebo, Jeff's dad, when I coached with him, under him at Carlisle, that, you know, one of the biggest qualities in bringing on any assistant is loyalty and trust. You can teach them the X's and O's. You can teach them to run what you want them to run and to coach them up. But, you know, same thing goes with this business is, you know, your name, my name's on the line, my son's name's on the line. You know, we have to have people that we can trust, that we know are going to come in and they're going to run this the way we want it run. They're going to teach kids the right way. Okay. And develop, you know, a relationship, because you're working with not only kids, but parents, and they have to represent you the right way. And they have to know what they're doing. You know, number one. So that's number one. Absolutely.
Okay. Let's dive into some specifics of player development. I know you and I talked before the podcast a little bit about just looking at maybe some different player types, or just if you were going to work with a kid at a certain age. And I guess I would just leave it to you as to what you feel comfortable sharing. But just to give our audience out there, if we have coaches listening, some things that, hey, if I want to work on developing this type of player, I'm working with a player at this particular age group or this particular skill set, what are some things that I can do to actually make the player better? And I know we're audio here, and Joe also did one of our webinars. So if you're listening and you want to check out Joe's competitive edge model, which he mentioned, he went through that when he did a webinar with us, which you can find on our website at hoopheadspod.com again. So just to the best of our ability, Joe, what we're going to try to do is give coaches out there, give players out there who might be listening some things that they can take away that maybe they can't get to you in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, or Italy, or wherever else you're going to be around the world, but they can take away some of the knowledge that you have to help themselves become a better player, or for coaches to help their players become better.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll tell you, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a little heads up on this, how this is going to roll. So I've been very fortunate, especially, I'll tell you, my phone is jumping off the hook. Matter of fact, one of my guys just today just got offered by Kansas and Texas Tech in the same night.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah, and he's out at the Hillcrest School, Malachi Palmer. He's a 2024 kid. And another kid from Canada, Jacob Theodosa, is on the Canadian national team, another 2024 kid. So I've been working, you know, to preface this, I work with kids who are beginners, work with kids who are elementary, middle school, high school, kids on very, very high levels that I'm talking about. There's numerous kids that I'm working with on those levels, you know, and a lot of times I say this to people all the time. It's like, you know, yeah, I won't say everybody can train a kid who's very talented, but to me, show me that you can take a middle school kid who's a beginner and make them better. Show me that you can take an elementary kid who's just learning, elementary kid who's just learning to love the game and make them better. To me, then you're doing a great job. Yeah, it's a different scenario with kids that are highly talented, like the one percenters, I call them, because most of the kids are not the one percenters. Most of the kids are the 99%ers who aren't at that level, and they're the most of the kids that you work with. But to answer your question, so here's what I do. So a couple of things. Working with Olympic teams from around the world and national teams is something that I do every year. And recently I've been doing that again for this year, and I'm continuing to do it this year. Is a lot of these Olympic teams have come up with what they call player profiles, what they're looking for in different positions, which I have found to be very, very valuable. So the interesting thing is, as I'm teaching them player development, that's what I do through this program with the U.S. Olympic Committee, the NBA, the NCAA. We all get together. I do the player development part. So I'm teaching them player development, but I'm also learning from them and what they do, because a lot of these programs do some tremendous stuff. So to answer your question, the first thing that I do, okay, before I get into the different positions in terms of the player profiles, the first thing that I would say to coaches is, you want to take a kid and you want to run him through some basic offensive movements, whether it's, you know, footwork movements, performance training movements, and watch their footwork. I am very, very big on this. I don't care if I'm working with a beginner. I don't care if I'm working with a kid who's a one percenter. I don't care if it's a guy, you know, a high major kid or whatever. One of the first things I do is I run him through some, you know, some footwork drills. You know, we have some different drills we do. Again, I can't show them to you on here, but basic pivoting, okay? We call them box drills, where you have to learn to pivot with both feet. So the first thing that you want to do with a player, in my opinion now, okay, because again, I've been very fortunate to see it all in all angles, is to work on basic footwork and to work on front pivoting, reverse pivoting, moving into their shot, you know, coming into their shot, see what their footwork looks like. Because at the end of the day, one of the things that really that's really been great for us and our success has been built on is footwork. Because most coaches today, high school level, youth level, no one's working, even at college level, I could tell you stories all day about that, that they are not working on footwork. And to me, footwork is so big, a big part of every aspect of basketball, whether it's ball handling, having your feet active, whether it's shooting, whether it's moving defensively, whether it's just moving up and down the court. So the first thing I would do is put them through some footwork. And that's regardless of the level of the player. Just even basic stuff like just seeing how they run, seeing how they backpedal. We have all kinds of drills that we do. You know, you have to run into the drill. You have to backpedal into the drill. You have to deslide. You have to deslide into an offensive, you know, into a catch and shoot. You know, all those. And so I'll do what I call combo drills, where I'll combine footwork movement into shooting and ball handling. So, you know, I think that's the first thing that I would do at any level from any kid.
So that allows you obviously to get a feel for where the kid's baseline level is in terms of their ability to control their body, right? Because
correct.
I know that if you can't be on balance when you're on a basketball floor, you're not going to be very successful at any of the skills. All you have to do is go and watch any game. And the players who are the best players typically are the ones that are rarely off balance. Now, their body might be leaning one direction or another, but they're able to maintain balance. That all goes back to those basics of your feet and how you're able to control your feet, how you're able to pivot, how you're able to move. And I think that's a great way to A, get kids started. But then I think B, sometimes, and you mentioned it, that a lot of times it's easy for that to be neglected almost because it's hidden. Because clearly, right, when a kid has a ball Absolutely. In their hands, they're doing things right. they're doing it with their hands, right? So you're watching their shot. Most coaches are watching, well, what's their release like? How's their follow through? Where's their elbow? All those kinds of things. Whereas you look down at their feet and you could be like, oh, yeah, I see where the problem is. It all starts down here and it just flows. It flows upward. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in the fact that, hey, I got to fix these things up here. But if you don't build that foundation, then you've really got nothing. And I think one of the things that is unique about your approach, and you've mentioned it a couple of times, but I think it's worth repeating here, is the fact that when you're doing things, you're also not only working on the player's basketball skill, but you're also working on the player's athleticism. So dive into that. Once you get past that initial evaluation of a player, and now you're starting to really work with them to improve their specific skills. Again, if you want to get into the positional Olympic stuff, that would be great. But just how do you incorporate the athletic movement piece of it into the basketball skill development? Because I think that's really where your secret sauce lies.
Yeah. So what we do is we'll do movements without a ball. Then we'll do movements with a ball. Okay. So we run a couple of both. And I'll be honest with you, I got a lot of this from Duke, being around their program for the past over 25 years and their sports performance people and their strength coach, Will Stevens, and what they do down there. So it's been a combination of things where, you know, like I said, we do stuff with a ball, we'll do stuff without a ball. And one of the things that I really believe in, and we talk about this all the time also, is that the best players are the ones that move the best. With the ball and without the ball, they're the best players. So that's what we focus on. Whether it's as simple as changing pace in movements with a ball and without a ball, like literally running up down the floor, going from fast to slow to stop. Okay, and learning how to stop. It's funny. We're just working on this tonight. We had a middle school group, and we're teaching them how to stop. Okay, that's how many coaches work on stopping, you know, going fast and being able to stop. I mean, there are things, they're basic movements that, and again, we had a middle school group and they weren't high level. Okay. They're just average middle school players, but teaching them how to stop and control the jump stop and control their body. Okay. Before stepping through and making a pass, you know, and a lot of this stuff I call like micro skills, where you take a skill and you break it down into smaller parts. So we spent, to answer your question, I think we spent a lot of time doing that, whether it's a micro skill in a movement. Learning how to land properly, learning how to decelerate, learning how to accelerate, or into a micro skill with a ball, learning how to front pivot. You know, taking a, you know, we do line drills with USA basketball where you dribble the ball. We all are used to USA national teams do this. They dribble the ball and they must jump stop and front pivot, reverse pivot, both with both feet different ways. So, you know, you just build it that way and you build it without a ball, and then you build it with a ball. You know, and I think that is the key. I mean, you could stop and teach shooting technique all you want with the upper body, but at the end of the day, you know, and I firmly believe this because of my experiences of where I've been and what I've done, that it, and again, you talk about the foundation, it all starts with the feet. Footwork. I say this all the time. You got to fight for your feet every single day, no matter what you do, no matter what skill we're working on. Whether it's a pass, stepping through, whether it's a finish, jump stopping, stepping through on the jump stop, you know, reverse pivoting, all those things are just, that's just the foundation. And I think so many coaches miss that because they're so worried about, is there elbow underneath the ball on the shot? Well, that's all well and good. But, you know, again, I have a lot of background in performance training and the physio part of it. And I know that it all starts at the bottom, right? And with your every joint, at the bottom, working its way up, every movement affects another movement. You know, whether you have your feet turned or your shoulders turned, you know, all those different things, if that makes sense.
It makes total sense. I think when you were talking, one of the things that, so I coached a sixth grade girls team this winter, which was my daughter's team. And we did several things throughout our practices during the season that sort of mimicked what you talked about. So one of the things that I tried to do with them is we have a tendency to, as a team, to dribble and kind of keep dribbling and then just pass the ball while we're still on the move. So I'm dribbling to the right wing, and instead of stopping and passing the ball into the post or passing it to the corner or passing it back to the top, I'm just kind of running and throwing a hook pass with my feet still going. So one of the things we really tried to work on is, A, you got to jump stop, and then you got to step through so you can protect the ball from the defense as you're making the pass, and then also be able to put some juice on the pass. So I see the value in that 100%. And then the other thing that I love that you said is talking about the ability to change speeds, the ability to have a change of pace, the ability to go fast and then go slow. And what's always struck me about that, and I'll never forget when I learned that for the first time, when I was probably, I was probably in high school, and I had a friend who, his dad had season tickets on the floor to the Cavs games at the old Richfield Coliseum. And I would get to go to a couple games with him every season. And I remember sitting on the floor, and this is probably when I'm 15, 16 years old, and being amazed that those players, it really didn't look like they were moving very fast. You're watching them out there, and most of the time, they're not moving very fast. Most of the time, they're completely controlled, and they're gliding to this spot, or they're sliding here, and then there's that boom, right? That acceleration that obviously is at a completely different level than what most players are, versus you go and watch a third grade travel basketball game and there's two speeds. Either the kid is not moving, the kid's not moving at all, or they're sprinting 9 million miles an hour and have no control or no idea where they're going to go. And the point that I guess I learned when I watched those NBA guys was that you don't have to be moving fast all the time. What you have to do is you have to be able to understand how to control your speed. And you don't have to be the fastest person in the world if you're good at changing speeds, because that change of pace, that deception, is what can allow you to maybe make up for a lack of raw quickness or raw speed just because you're good at changing speeds. And I think when you watch a high school game along the same lines, the best players are the ones who are moving at a change of pace. They're not going a million miles an hour. Whereas you see the 10th man who comes in off the bench, and everybody's like, oh, look at this guy. He hustles. Look at it. He's always moving. And you're like, yeah, he's always moving, but he has no idea where he's going, and he's not really generating anything with that movement. Whereas a better player, you might look at it and be like, oh, he's not moving quite as fast in this situation, but boom, he's got that burst and that acceleration. And I think that's what sets really good players apart. And if you're able to train that and work with kids, again, at all levels, on being able to do that, I think to me that's tremendously valuable. And you talked a little bit about how to do it with a group of middle school kids. Let's say you were going to work with a higher level kid. So let's say you're talking about a kid who's got a chance as a high school player to play at the college level. What are some things you might do with them to help them work on their change of pace?
Yes, that's funny you asked that, because I had a girl yesterday. She's in the middle of her high school season. She was just down at South Carolina. South Carolina's all over. She's only a freshman here. And she's ranked, like, I think, 35th in the country for her age group. And I just worked with her this yesterday. She had some time off in school. This is during the season. This just shows you what the best of the best does. She had practice later that day, but she had some time off, able to get in the gym with me that day. And we worked on a couple of things. We work on one of the things that I do with a really high level or player like her, or some of the other people that I work with, I make them earn the shot. So what I'll do is I'll make them make like three or four in a row different types of movements in the half court, literally almost covering half the half court before I will allow them to catch the ball and shoot it or make a move. And part of that would be like, they may need to make a come off a pin down. Okay. They might go from a pin down to coming off hard off a pin down, coming up off a pin down really hard about making a violent cut, to maybe making a basket cut into a flare, okay? And then I may make them, then I may give them some contact, have them come off of some contact for the ball. So what I try to do is I try a player at a higher level, I will make them what I call earn their shot. So by making a violent cut, by making a slow to fast, maybe a fast to slow cut, three or four different movements before I give them the ball. And then possibly like I said, guard them, give them contact, coming off a dribble for the last movement, just to incorporate all those different movements. And the other thing it does, it builds their shooting stamina towards the end of the game. Very seldom, or I'll make them circle a cone with their feet, like do a complete circle around a cone with their feet, take their person away, and then come off of three, a high three for a shot. So there's so many different things that I do with kids at that level. And I call those sort of like micro skills, where I break it down even more for them because they're to the point where they need that. So that's one of the things that I do. I found that to be really, really effective for high level kids, is make them make multiple movements, multiple cuts at various speeds, including contact, before I allow them to shoot the ball.
How do you balance out, and I think I know the answer to this, but I'm just curious to get your take on it. How do you balance out getting up reps as a shooter versus having a player earn their shot and working on the footwork and the things that you just described? What I'm guessing is that when they're with you, which again is a limited amount of time, it's not like you're working 20 hours a week with a player. So any player that's going to become a good player is going to improve their skills. Not only are they going to get that from you, but
right. You're
also going to be, they're also going to be getting reps up on their own. So just how do you, when you're having a conversation with a player, you're like, okay, we're going to work on this footwork piece of it. And so we want you to come hard off this pin down, or we want you to work on flare cuts, or we want you to make this tight circle around the cone to be able to work on getting those chopping feet before you're ready to take your shot.
Right.
We may not get up 500 shots in this hour that you're working with the player, but you're working on that footwork piece of it. Then I'm assuming there's a next conversation, which is, look, now you have to take these skills, and when you work on your own, you've got to do those same things. Is that kind of the approach that you take?
Yeah, it is. And I'll throw this in there, because almost everyone that I work with, I will start with just what I call some fine tuning. So what I'll do is, before I get into the making them earn the shot, that's sort of towards the end, especially when they're tired, because that's what I want them to. I want them to be able to make shots when they're tired. So I'll save a lot of that for the end. But what I'll start with, I have this, we call it intuit shooting, actually, where they have to come into a pocket area from different angles, working on their footwork. But before I get to that, I do a lot what I call tray shooting, because one of the things I'm really, really big on, and again, I'm firmly convinced of this, that that's one of my specialties is shooting, is putting the ball on the tray. Basically, the tray at the end of your shot, your hand's like a tray, and the ball has to sit on that tray, and that lines everything up. So what I'll do is I'll start with some basic footwork just to tighten up their footwork. We'll do some tray shooting before that. Then we'll do to intuit shooting, where they'll come into the pocket area with the proper footwork. They'll come in from different angles, right and left. Okay, just to make sure their footwork is correct again, just to tune that up. And then towards the end, we get up the reps of the earning the shot. So they're getting a lot of reps up, with the early part of it. And sometimes a lot of the better players, and I encourage this, they have their own warm-up routine, where they need to come in and you got to get up there, whether it's form shooting from the basket. We do tray shooting like that too, different things. We get some form shooting up, and then we do the basic footwork, and then we sort of progress it or load it that way into the shooting workout. So they're getting a ton of reps, and then obviously they're going doing this on their own. And then the other thing I do is, I do some stationary stuff. Okay. The stationary stuff I do is enabling them to increase their range. I got a whole system that I use where they make a couple of stationary ball handling moves into a shot, and we keep pulling them out, pushing them out, really loading up their legs and making them set their feet.
What does that ball handling look like? So if I'm a kid, and let's say I want to, right now I'm a 2-point shooter. I'll give you an example. Right. My son right now, he's in his first 3 years of his high school career, or I guess middle school and high school career. So as a seventh, eighth, and ninth grader, he made two jump shots. That's it. In three years, he made two jump shots. So over the last year, we've been trying to work with him to be able to obviously step out on the floor and make some shots. And he's made quite a few more, too many for me to count anymore, Joe. So that's at least good news.
Right. But I hear you.
So, but now the next thing is he's pretty solid from 12 to 16 feet, but obviously in today's game, you got to be able to shoot threes. So if I want to take him from being a pretty good shooter at 16 feet, what's something in terms of what you just described, the stationary ball handling and then stepping back into a shot to be able to extend his range so we can start working on his threes?
Yeah, I got the perfect thing for you. And again, I do this with kids, not only high level kids at all levels. So here's what you do, Mike. For any kid, this is for any kid that wants to really once you feel they're comfortable, you're comfortable with their technique and are able to shoot from three. Now, obviously, I'm not doing this with 8 year olds that don't have proper technique. So just right. I just want to preface it with that. Right,
right, right.
So okay, so here's what we got. We got five spots. We got both corners. We got both wings, and we got the top. Okay, so we can start at the top. So you start right outside the 3-point line at the top. We're gonna pound, really work on being aggressive with the ball and being aggressive with our feet. So we're gonna pound the ball one time with our right hand. We're gonna cross over. This is in the spot right there, top of the key. Pound the ball right hand, cross right to left, go right immediately left to right between the legs. You're gonna hop, like sort of like give a little bit of a hop, set your feet, and then shoot the three. And it's over and over again. So then we do it again. Pound right, right to left cross, left to right between the legs. Set our feet, drop our hips, set our feet by just hopping off the ground, off the floor a little bit. Set our feet, drop our hips, and go right into a 3-point shot. So we do a bunch there. Then we go to the right wing. Again, start with the right hand, do the same thing on the right wing at the 3-point line. And then go to the corner, same thing in the corner. Okay. And then we go to the left wing. We start with our left hand. So we dribble once to the left hand, pop the left to right crossover. Right to left between the legs, set our feet, drop our hips right into the three. We do a bunch there. Then we go to the left corner and we do the same thing with our left hand. And then what you do, once you get very good at that and you feel comfortable with that, you can start moving them back at the same spots. Just start moving them back. So what you're doing is you're having them be aggressive with the dribble. Okay. Cause I say break the floor. They got to be breaking the floor to the point they almost lose the ball in the dribble. Be aggressive with the dribble. Be aggressive with their footwork, setting their feet into the shot, if you understand what I mean, and then shooting the ball over and over and over again in those five spots. And you can say, okay, we need to make five at each spot. Then you can say, we need to make 10 at each spot before we go to the next spot. So you have five spots. You can say 10 at each spot. You got 50 makes for that draw. And let me tell you something. That is a tough shot because it seems easy, but if you go really hard with the ball, yeah, you go really hard with the ball and you load those feet up every time. That's a very, very challenging shot. But it's going to increase their range. It's going to increase their confidence for three. And then you can continue to increase their range from there on out.
Yeah, I love that. I think that we've done something similar to that. And we're doing it inside the 3-point line at this point where right. we've done it where we've gone 3-pound dribbles with whichever hand he's starting with. And then we've just gone one move. So let's say he goes 3-pound dribbles with the right hand, crossover, boom, shot. And then start three dribbles with the left hand, pound dribble, yep. And then boom, crossover. So we haven't done any of the combo, which is, I think, a really good idea to add into what we're doing. But it's interesting because it's such a process to be able to take what, you know, to try to work on form first and get that right, as you said. And then to be able to take that form and be able to extend the range out from a kid who played primarily inside and seeing him transfer out into the 3-point line has been, it's been interesting. It's been challenging. It's been something that has been a lot of fun for me to be able to work with my son on for sure. Just kind of getting a feel for, okay, what can we do to make this process work? And I think you said it best when you said, look, you got to produce results, right? Like I can spend as much time in a gym as I want doing the wrong things, but you got to find the right things and the things that translate to games, because anybody can set up a drill where you can get really good at a drill. But if it doesn't help you to improve your shooting in a game or your skills in a game, and you talked a little bit about decision-making, which I'm sure we'll get into here in a second, but obviously that's a big part of it, because I think one of the things that is a challenge in the game of basketball today, and we've actually had a couple of recent podcast guests on that have talked about this, that you have players today that are tremendously skilled, right? Even the 12th player on a high school team compared to probably when you were coaching the high school game, the 12th, 11th, 13th man on your team was nowhere near as skilled as the players that we have at the back end of a bench today. And I think that what goes along with that is sometimes we're only teaching those skills in isolation. And because you have so many players who are skilled and because you have so many players who are invested in their basketball career in such a way where their parents have paid a lot of money for them to go to a trainer, for them to go and play AAU, and for them to travel and do all these different things. And now you have this challenge of, well, yeah, we got tremendously skilled players, but there's still this level of, yeah, you still have to have a basketball IQ. You still have to have a feel for the game. You still have to be able to play the game and make decisions. So let's talk a little bit about how you incorporate that. Now, obviously, it's a little bit easier when you're doing your small group stuff because you can put them in two-on-two or three-on-three situations and talk them through that. But let's talk a little bit about maybe if you're working with a player one-on-one, I'm assuming it's conversations and helping them and just talking through it. So maybe just give us, how do you work on player IQ? You can take it from a small group, big group, individual, however you want to approach that.
Yeah. So, you know, that's really interesting because one of the big things that we pride ourselves in also is, you know, is the decision-making piece of it. So we do drills where they have to make decisions, whether I'm working with the individual, I'll give you some examples of a couple of them here. When we're working with individuals or small groups, whatever, that's a big piece. The thing that I find interesting though sometimes is, you know, and everybody has their own philosophy. I get that. But, you know, you can't make a decision if you have no skill. And that's one thing, you know, Coach Showalter and I, we follow the USA basketball progressions. We feel there is a progression for skills and things like that. And I'm all for decision making. But, you know, if you can't get the ball across half court, I don't know how many decisions you're going to make, what kind of decisions you're going to make. So, I mean, I'm very big on decision making, but it depends on the level. I mean, that's something that has to be worked in. But just to give you an example of what we do decision-making is, okay, when I'm doing a shooting workout, and I do this all the time with whatever level kids I'm working with, you know, I may have them like attack the wing or something like that, make a move. And then as they're coming at me, they'll see my hands up, like I'll have a target. I'll tell them, my hands are up, you have to pass me the ball. Okay, so my hands are up, they pass me the ball and they relocate. Okay. If they attack the wing and my hands are down, then they shoot the ball. So I'm not only having them work on their shot. So we've gone through all the progressions of the shot work or what have you. Now they have to read the defense. And that's just me and them. So they have to read what I'm doing. If I charge at them, so if they're coming in and they're making a move, if I charge at them, that's their cue. They got to attack the basket. That's something I love. I tell you what, and it really forces kids to keep their head up, really forces kids to pay attention to what's going on. Okay. They're just not out there running around and just jacking shots. So that's one way that's one drill that we do that I really like from different areas on the floor that they have to make those decisions in terms of like when we're working one-on-one. And another one that we do, if we have a couple of kids, at least two kids, we'll have them make decisions on the shot where we'll line up. It's sort of hard to describe this, but you have cones like on a diagonal on the wing, and the offense will like be at the one end, like be at the top of the diagonal, like going in from the wing to the basket. All right, they'll be at the top, and then the defender will be right behind them, and the offense will make a basket cut and come around the outside, circle around the outside of the cone, like they're curling towards the top of the key with the defender following them. The coach will pass the offense the ball. So the offense has the advantage, obviously, because defenders behind him, they got to circle around the cones and come around for the curl. And when they catch the ball, if they feel like they're open, that the defender is still behind them, they can catch and shoot. If they feel the defender pressuring them on their hip, they can catch, pump fake, cross over, and pull up. So we have them make decisions, live decisions, and shooting that way, too. With a one-on-one situation like that.
Yeah. It's interesting with the shooting piece of it, Joe. I think you see and hear different philosophies. And as I've again been working with my son, you try to read and just listen to different people and kind of get their thoughts on it. And, you know, clearly you have one way that you can become a better shooter, right, is to get reps up. And so if you have a Dr. Dish and you have, you know, a machine that'll get you passes and you can get lots of reps up in a short period of time. And yet that in a lot of ways eliminates the decision part of it. And then you also have the idea of, like you just described, having a defender. So I've read other people that say, look, doing all those, getting 500 reps of just a machine passing it to you isn't nearly as valuable as 100 reps with a hand up. And I can see both. It's possible, I think, for both of those to be correct in that I think the more reps you get, even if they're reps that aren't decisions, I still think that's valuable. And yet I think
absolutely.
I think there's also tremendous value in cutting down the number of reps and doing it in a more game-like scenario. And I think what it comes down to, it's almost like your diet, right? You have to do everything in moderation. If the only thing you're doing is shooting on a machine, you're probably going to become a pretty good shooter, but you're probably not getting to the max level that you can. And conversely, if you're not getting a high number of reps because you're always doing it within the context of a drill, it's just like you can only get so many reps in a game like scenario, right? You can get a lot more reps right when you're by yourself in the gym, just getting things up. So I think you have to balance the two. And to me, that's really where it lies, where the secret to being a good shooter is. You have to get a lot of shots up at the basket, but you also have to do it and be in situations where there's a defender or there's a decision that has to be made. Cause in a game, you don't get to just stand and get a perfect pass coming to you every single time. It just doesn't work that way.
No, and you're 100% correct, Mike. You know what? All those things are very, very important. You know, I think there's a time and a place for every single one of those things. It can't be all one and not the other. I think if you give a little bit of both, then you've got it. And again, I'm just speaking from experience because, like, you know, like I always say, I've seen it all pretty much and done it all, and I've seen everybody do it. And that's why I feel I'm so fortunate, because I've taken a little bit from everybody. I mean, I've just been very fortunate to be able to take a little bit from this, from that person. One big thing I want to talk about, though, real quick, for coaches that are out there, and most of the players I work with, on the highest level of players down to whatever, they love this. I use a lot of trigger words. You know, people always say that, you know, coaches talk too much. So you got to use trigger words, like with shots. I'm really big on staying in your shots. Kids will hear me say stay, because I really believe that your shooting excellence depends on whether you stay in your shot or not. A lot of kids get happy feet. They dance around. They fall around. They do all kinds of stuff. But I'll scream at a kid, stay, when they shoot the shot. I'll make them stay in their shot. Or I'll say tray. If they're not getting the ball in the tray at the release point, I'll say tray. I'll tell them, you know, make violent cuts. I'll say elbow to eye. You know, if they're shooting the ball flat, I'll say elbow to eye. So the trigger words, once you work your skills and your footwork, and then I'll tell you what, here's the most under-taught thing that I've had tremendous success with is aggressive footwork. Like the last two steps, I really believe in the inside foot, the 1-2, left, right, left. Even though there's the hop is in there. I mean, there's times you use that, but I'm really big on the last two steps have to be their fastest steps. They have to be really aggressive. It's almost like an airplane landing on a runway. It's not like a pop with, you know, their feet hitting flat. It's like they're gliding into the runway left, right, or right, left. But they have to be really aggressive. Their sneakers almost squeak. That is a very, very under-taught, but I have found a micro skill in that is tremendously important for consistency in your shot, especially later in the game when kids get tired. So I just wanted to throw that in there too.
Yeah, that goes back to, I think, when you're thinking about the 1-2 step and how that works versus coaches who like to and prefer to teach the hop, I think there's a place for both of them. I was always,
correct,
as a kid, I was always somebody that shot off the 1-2. And then when I was training kids, I did the same thing. And then we had, this is now back probably about the time you were on for the first time, we had Craig Campbell on, who he coaches a girls team at Clovis West High School out in California. And he's a big proponent of the hop. And one of the things that he said to me, which I thought was interesting that I never really had thought about, he's like, well, why do you teach the 1-2? And I always said, well, a lot of the kids that I'm working with are elementary school kids or middle school kids. And I don't feel like they have the strength to really get the ball up to the basket when they hop. And he's like, well, maybe that's just the way you'd like to shoot. Maybe some of the kids that you're working with, maybe they prefer the hop. And it started getting me thinking about sort of a different way to approach it. And and kind of looking at what's the kid's strength and how do they do it? Because certainly I think players probably have a preference one way or the other, but they need to have both of those types of footwork in their bag for sure.
Right. And you know, let me say this to that point. If I have a kid who loves the hop, I'm not changing them. I'm like, you know, unless I'm working with an elementary kid that just has no footwork whatsoever, and they just need, you need to learn proper footwork. If a kid says to me, coach, if I'm working a high-level kid, he goes, I prefer the hop, then you know what? Great, go for it. And I'll still make sure that they have, you know, the proper footwork and all that kind of stuff. But, I would never tell a kid, you know, okay, well, you know, I'm not going to force it down their throat and say you have to use a 1-2. I prefer that. And I think even the kids that do use a 1-2, they know that they have to use the hop in certain situations. Certain situations in a game, that's what's going to come down to. So here again, it's just like what you said earlier. You know, shooting off the gun, thousands of shots versus, you know, working on some decision-making and some contact in your shot. You need a little bit of both because you use both, right? So, I mean, that's just one of those things where I think, you know, I agree with you on that.
Yeah, it's interesting just when you think about the different ways and approaches that you can have. And I think what it comes down to, right, is that the game itself is so dynamic. And there's so many things that happen within the context of a game that you can't possibly account for every single one in an individual skill development drill. There's just no way that you can recreate that dynamic environment in a 1-on-0 with a cone out there. You just can't replace that. No. And yet at the same time, I think the point that you're making is that you have to have that basic skill, whether we're talking about the footwork that we discussed earlier, where just I'm dribbling a ball and I got to be able to front pivot. I got to be able to reverse pivot. And I got to be able to do that without falling over. I got to be able to do that with outstanding up straight. I got to be able to continue to play low. And those are all things that, sure, can you work on those in the context of a game? I guess, but you better know how to do those things first before you start being thrown into making decisions. There's a certain baseline of things that you just have to have. And again, you need to rep it out, because if you don't, then when you get in a game, you're just not going to be at the same level as you would if you get those reps. And so I think it's because basketball is such a dynamic game, it's what's so fun, right? It's why you love doing what you're doing. It's why all of us love to play the game. It's why we love to coach the game, because there's no right or wrong way necessarily to do it. There's more than one way to be right, I guess is a better way to say
correct.
It. There's more than one way to be right. And I think that's something that sometimes as coaches, whether player development or whether we're coaching our teams, we forget that, look, there's lots of different ways to win a game or to score on a possession or to stop another team from scoring. You can do that in a myriad of ways, and that's what makes the game interesting.
Yeah, and one thing I'll throw in and finish that up, and then because I really want to give you this Olympic stuff quick too. Yeah,
absolutely. Let's jump into that next.
Yeah, so you know, when I speak for USA Basketball again, I say this all the time. You know, some people will say, "Well, I'm old school." Well, I'm new school. Here's what I tell coaches all the time. We're not old school or new school. We got to be one school. We got to take a little bit of the old, take a little bit of the new, find out what works best to make your players better. It's all about that. At the end of the day, it's about them. It's not how much you know, but it's how much you can teach and get and improve players and teams. That's what a lot of, you know, we talk about trainers again. That's what a lot of trainers miss. Okay. It's just, oh, it's got to be my way. This is the way it is, you know. No, you got to take the best of the best from different things and then use that to make players better. At the end of the day, what it comes down to is, are they getting better or not? The results. What are your results? If you're not getting results, then you're not doing something right. I mean, that's just the way it is.
No question about it. All right, jump into your Olympic stuff.
Yeah, okay, the Olympic stuff. So here's the deal, because I think this is gonna really fascinate some coaches. So I've been fortunate enough to work with a lot of different Olympic coaches and teams and national teams and stuff like that. And a couple of them, I sort of put this together from my work with them. They've come up with player profiles, what they're looking for their players on their national teams. So we're going to go through a point guard real quick. I'll give you some stuff. Shooting guard, a forward, and a center. When they're picking their national teams, here's what they're saying. If you're a point guard, here are the things that you should be able to do. And again, I'm doing a lot of this. I was doing a lot of this anyway, but it really brings it out. So let's go with the point guard first. Okay, obviously it says, okay, first of all, point guard possesses excellent ball handling and passing skills. So if you have someone who says, hey, I want to be a point guard, and let me qualify it with this. We train kids to be basketball players, regardless of what position you play, just make you the best basketball player. Well, sometimes you get a kid who's like, you know, hey, I played primarily to point. Okay, so a point guard possesses excellent ball handling and passing skills, obviously. Another thing that they really look for in point guards, this is, again, on a lot of international teams, the mid-range game. Because you hear about people talking about the NBA, oh, there's no mid-range game, whatever, which I think is total nonsense because there is a mid-range game. Okay, so a point guard being able to take the ball off the dribble, okay, take it off the dribble. Has to be a good shooter off the ball screen. That's one thing that we do. We work with kids coming out, you know, options off a ball screen. So they're looking for point guards that can come off a ball screen and hit a shot. That's something that you can incorporate into your workouts. You know, what kind of shots you get out of your offense is something you should be doing. Okay. They're able to create for others, break down and create for others. Make decisions in a full and half court situations. So you can put them in situations where they have to make decisions, work on those things. Be able to read the ball screen, shoot off the ball screen. We already talked about that. Being able to pass to both the perimeter, work on perimeter passing and low post entries. Okay, that's something else that they ask for point guards to be able to do. Okay, so that's just something for point guards I thought was really interesting. So when international teams are looking at their point guards, they're looking for those skills in specifically, which I thought was pretty cool. And then another one is for the shooting guard, for the two guard. Okay, need to consistently make 3-point shots, coming off screens and spot ups. So when you're working with somebody like that that wants to be a two guard or shooting guard, working on coming off screens and spotting up, obviously, being able to read the defense and move well without the ball. That's that earning the shot, right? There's those drills of earning the shot, but teaching them how to move without the ball, making violent cuts, changing pace that we talked about. Again, be able to shoot and read advantages off the ball screen, things of that nature. Good ball handling skills, working on their ball handling, being a secondary ball handler, being able to shoot off a transition offense. We do drills where we call it transition shooting, actually, where you're working on your transition shooting for a shooting guard. Being able to play one-on-one in isolation. Okay, we do a lot of one-on-one drills in isolation, being able to play off of that.
What's your favorite one-on-one drill?
Oh man, you asked a loaded question right there. Okay. I'll tell you a really good one, man. This is one that I guarantee you've never seen. Matter of fact, we did this. I think I showed this at the Hoosier Clinic. I think I showed this in New York City for USA Basketball too. Got a lot of good feedback. Okay, I'll give you a good one here. So here's what we do. So we have a offense is on the wing, okay? Defense starts underneath the basket. So the offense on the wing makes a baseline move, okay? Defense is starting in the lane line, okay? The defense is coming up the lane line as the offense is setting their player up on the same side of the floor on the wing. Defense comes up the lane to the elbow in a sprint and then comes out and sets a screen on the ball, okay? So that's the defense is setting the screen. Offense is coming off the screen. So as the offense comes off the screen, so you get a couple actions out, a couple good different teaching actions out of this. So offense comes off the screen. The defense rolls as the offense comes off the screen, rolls to the basket, okay? Rolls to the basket, and then there's a cone set out by the three-point line on the far end. After the defense rolls to the basket, they go and touch the cone. Offense gets to the nail coming off the screen, hits the coach that's standing there in the same wing where they started, goes and touches half court. So the guy coming off the screen goes and touches half court. The coach throws him the ball on his way back in from half court. The defense who set the screen and rolled to the basket then continued out to the opposite three-point line and touched the cone. He comes now and plays defense on the offense who's getting the ball coming from half court. Must go out and meet them, and they play one-on-one from there.
That's awesome. Yeah, you get a lot of movement. You got a lot of things that are game-like, and then you top it off with one-on-one piece of it. Yeah, exactly. And you're doing it in such a way where it's almost like a transition, right? Where kids catching the ball, and boom, you got to attack in transition, which we all know, especially in today's game, where do most kids catch the ball in transition? They don't catch it where they did 20 years ago, which is – on the move, filling the lane and going down to try to get a layup. No, they're catching the ball outside the three-point line, most likely with a player closing out on him. So the ability to attack that closeout off transition is a skill that any player, I don't care what position you play, that's a skill you better have in your bag if you're going to be a good player.
Yeah, and just think about that. Teaching kids how to sprint to screens. Teaching kids to go out and stop the ball. What they'll do at first is they'll roll to the basket, the defender. They'll go touch the cone, and then they'll come back to the middle of the lane. But the teaching point is, no, you go out, you meet them on their way in at the top of the key. You go out and you stop the basketball. So, I mean, there's so many great things loaded up into that. That's one of the things that we love. It's one of the one-on-ones that we love.
That's a good one. All right, you just finished our goat. Next.
Okay. Yeah. So let's go for a forward. Okay. So if they're talking about the forward being able to receive the ball in transition, spot up as a trail man, run the floor well, beat opposing posts down the floor. I do this with postmen sometimes. Have them run from half court to the block before I give them the ball. Must be a consistently be able to shoot the 3-point shot now. So working on their threes. Let me see. Read defender when setting screens, either to be able to work on their rolling or popping, depending on the situation. An excellent offensive rebounder. You could do offensive rebounding drills with them. So that's the power forward. So that's just a bunch of profile stuff, skills that they're looking for in those people. And then the center, being able to run the floor well in transition, beating the people down the floor, like we said. Being able to establish post position. Five man is the first big ceiling in the paint, teaching them how to seal, playing a low post position, being able to attack the basket, creating advantages for teammates, making decisions out of the low post, set solid screens, working on those screens, able to roll hard, create advantage for himself or the team, and make correct reads on outlet passes. The wings work on that. We do drills where you make an outlet pass and you can come out and close out and then pop into a shot. So there's different things you can do for centers. So the thing that I thought was really cool, though, like I said, they're literally listing skill sets for players at each position in the international game, which I thought that's pretty interesting how they're actually listing skill sets.
Yeah, and I'm sure. And you could break that down right even further, Joe, where you could take that and you could say, okay, you mentioned micro skills before. So now you take, okay, yeah, you want your point guard to be a good ball handler, you want him to be a good passer. And then you mentioned, okay, well, what's one kind of pass they got to be able to throw, right? They got to be able to throw an entry pass into the post. So maybe they got to be able to throw a pocket pass off a ball screen, or maybe they have to be able to throw a skip pass, or maybe they have to penetrate all the way to the lane and then be able to kick that pass out to the corner for a three. And so you can further break that down. And then now once you start breaking that down, then take it one step further. And now like, okay, can I design a drill that helps my players to work on this particular skill that they're going to need to fit those player profiles? So I think it's really interesting stuff. And I could see where, whether you're a coach as a trainer, whether you're a coach of a high school team or a college team, look, you have this set of things that you need for your players at that particular position to be able to do, especially if you're a coach that runs and recruits, if you're a college coach, you have a particular style. So you're looking for, hey, our foreman has to be able to do X, Y, and Z to be able to fit into this. And so you start building out that player profile. And now you know what you're looking for, but you also know what you have to do in terms of player development.
Correct. And you know what's even – they take it one step further. Obviously, you know, we can't get into this tonight. But they actually chart all these things. It's crazy. I mean, there's so much with the analytics game now and all that kind of stuff. There's so much you can do with a lot of this that they actually chart all that out too. But, yeah, I just thought that was fascinating stuff that a lot of us are doing anyway, but they've actually broken it down into player profiles of what they're looking for on their national teams.
Are there one or two international countries that maybe would be surprising to somebody like me that says, hey, this country's really, really innovative. They're coming up with some interesting things that maybe their talent level isn't that high yet, but maybe from a thought process standpoint and an X's and O's, a player development standpoint, countries that are doing some really interesting things that you've seen, maybe just one or two, and you don't even have to get into specifics, but I'm just curious if there's any countries out there that are, you know, on the cusp of really coming up with some interesting things that maybe we will see coming forward in the international game.
Well, I could tell you one immediately that comes to mind, and they're gaining on us, is Canada. Canada, you know, and again, I've been fortunate because I've been able to work with Canada basketball through super clinics and been around a lot of those people. But they are, I mean, besides having, they're starting to have very, they have some very, very, very good players, number one. Okay. But they have, they're really doing a good job of dissecting this and breaking things down. They're one off the top of my head. And then the other one that I see are some of the, I guess you could say the Eastern European teams, you know, like Latvia, for instance. Latvia, the guy, they won the 3-on-3 gold medal this year in Tokyo. And actually was sort of interesting. I didn't realize this till after the fact because I just didn't catch it. But the coach, the Latvian coach, is one of the guys I worked with who coached the, that actually won the 3-on-3, the men's gold medal in the 3-on-3 this year or this Olympic. So I think a lot of those, and look at the guys in the NBA, Doncic and guys like that, where they're coming from.
Right.
So yeah, they're the ones that are, those countries are the ones that are getting it done. I mean, they're really gaining on us. And, you know, a lot of the NBA people will tell you that it's you know, yeah, we still have the edge, but you know, they're gaining fast. That's for sure.
Our talent pool is so big.
Yes.
That I think what we have to make sure we do in this country, and I think that's what USA Basketball is doing a great job of, is to make sure that we're teaching the game, we're maximizing the talent pool that we have and developing players in the right way. And I think a lot of these international countries, right, they're doing things the right way. They have to be more innovative because they just don't have the same talent pool that we have here in the United States. And I think if you could meld the talent pool that we have with all the great coaching and just all the player development, the things that you see sometimes in the international game, you put those together and that's when you really have something special. Or you have a player like a Luka Doncic that comes over who has the physical tools to be a great player and then was taught under that system and is obviously one of the whatever you want to say, five best players in the league, and at 22, 23 years old, and who knows where he's going to end up. But yeah, it's amazing how far the international game has come and what the, you know, think back to the 92 Dream Team, right? That's the team that kind of opened up international basketball, where before we're sending college kids and nobody really thinks much of it. Yeah, we're winning. And then all of a sudden, boom, you lose the gold in South Korea in 1988. And suddenly it's a crisis here for USA Basketball. And we send the Dream Team over, and then, yeah, we end up crushing all those teams. But what we did was great for the game because it just opened up the world to the game of basketball, and it's made the game better. Again, think back 30 years ago, how many international players were there in the NBA, right? You had Šarūnas Marcelionis came over, right? probably one of the first guys. And you know, now what I would bet there's probably close to 100 guys, I would bet, if not more, that are international players in the NBA. So it's crazy the way things have turned.
Oh no! I mean, I in my work with the Celtics and stuff like that, I've got to work with a lot of front office people and their coaches and scouts and stuff like that. And yeah, let me tell you something, that you know, they're more, and not only NBA, in college, man, they're going after these guys like right and left. That kid from Canada, everybody's after him. A kid from Canada that I work with on a junior national team. They're coming on in a big way. And you know, in credit to USA Basketball and Coach Showalter, man, what he's done in his time, that I was lucky enough to get in the ground floor. I mean, through Coach K, like I said, and some other people recommended me, but I got in the ground floor of what they're doing now. And you know, my role's starting to grow with them, and I'm very fortunate. But they do a tremendous job. They're turning this whole thing around in terms of not just being a Olympic team. We're a coaching education organization. We're a youth development organization now, a national organization, the way it should be, like other countries have been. So credit to Coach Showalter and USA Basketball and what they're doing.
Can't say enough about Coach Show and just what he's done for us, Jason and I, and getting an opportunity to go and work at Snow Valley in Iowa, and just everything that Coach Show has done for us, and participating in every one of our roundtables, just like you. And man, we've been blessed to be able to have a relationship with him and just USA Basketball, what they're trying to do and what they are doing. And I think we're headed in the right direction. And there's still there's still work to be done. I think there's a lot of education of players, parents, coaches, and especially when you talk about what youth basketball looks like and what we might want it to look like in an ideal world. There's still a lot of work to be done, but I think that the game, when we talk USA Basketball and clearly Coach Show, we talk about the game being in good hands. There's no question. There's no question about that. All right, let's wrap up. Let's go into part three. And let's talk about Coach K wrapping up, obviously, a Hall of Fame career at Duke. And you've been fortunate for the last 20-some-odd years to have a relationship with him. Talk a little bit about how that relationship got started, and then I'm just going to leave the floor to you to share stories and wisdom that he's, you know, you've been fortunate enough to glean from him over the years through your relationship.
Okay. Yeah, it's really surreal to me, to be honest with you. I was down this year. I got down beginning of the season to they had two non-conference games back to back, and I wanted to get down and see him for the last year, and just sitting there as he came out and just thinking to myself, man, I mean, how blessed have I been to have him as a friend and a mentor for over 25 years. I'm sitting I'm literally right behind him on the bench. I mean, I can literally just about tap him on. I'm literally sitting in the huddle during the game, you know, just watching that and thinking about all that. I had so many things come through my mind. Like tonight, I could talk forever. I'm just going to keep it brief and just say a few things. But it all started like when I played at Carlisle and I took a PG up in New England after high school for an extra year of basketball and another year of schooling. And he was at West Point at the time, and he was recruiting me really heavy. A guy by the name of Chuck Swenson was his young grad assistant. Chuck Swenson was a head coach at William & Mary. Then he was a head coach assistant coach Tommy Amaker of Michigan. But he would send Chuck Swenson to all my games up and all through New England, playing in the New England Prep School League and recruiting me. And I'll never forget this. I still have a hand-signed letter from Coach from West Point. You know, and towards the end of my year, PG year, I get this phone call and they're like, yeah, we're ready for you. Come on up, we'll get this done. Come up, get your physical. And then I'll tell you what, like, I just got cold feet. I was like, you know, at that point, nobody knew who Coach K was anyway, but I was like, yeah, you know what? This is pretty cool. I can play Division I basketball. Then I started thinking, man, it was 5 years of service. Do I really want to do that afterwards? So at the end of the day, I decided not to go. And it's interesting because he would have left 2 years after that, because that's when he left. So I would have finished my sophomore year, and that's when he would have left to go to Duke. And I would have still been up at West Point for my last 2 years, and then my military service and Coach K would have been long gone. So as it turned out, I mean, it worked out the best for me. And then through the years as a young coach at Carlisle, I just maintained that contact. And he got, you know, I asked him one time, like way back when, I said, hey, you know, you think I could ever work a camp? And he said, yeah, I'd love to have you. And the rest has been history. I mean, and it's like a fraternity down there, man. I mean, people are lined up, you know, by the thousands want to work that camp. And it's the same, almost the same guys every year. The word was always, if you ever, you're not going to get into this camp to work unless somebody dies or decides not to come back. I mean, they're very picky in terms of who they brought in there. I mean, they ran their camp. Their camp was no joke. They ran their camp. I tell Coach Shill all the time, it's very much like Snow Valley. They ran their camp just like they ran their program. Well, Coach K was around all the time, and you worked. I mean, it was you know, we always used to laugh because at Carolina, our friends were at Carolina camp. They'd come over in the afternoon. We're like, what the hell are you guys doing here? We're like, oh, we got 4 hours off to play golf or go swimming. We're over to Duke. We're in Cameron's sweating our ass off. That's before they had air conditioning in Cameron. We're like, what the hell, man? We're in here, you know, busting our ass. And these guys are coming over and watching us work camp. It's so crazy. But anyway, a couple of things. It was always like a clinic when you were at camp, because he was there and he talked to us and he, you know, he shared all kinds of wisdom. A couple of things I just wanted to share with the coaches that might be on here, because again, this is it, man. I mean, we're not gonna ever see another one like him. And like I said, he's been so good to me. Like, you know, he got me involved with USA Basketball and, you know, a whole host of other things. But anyway, he talks about leadership, and here's what he says. And I thought this was really interesting because this is him to a T. He says, leadership's the ability to change and adapt. A lot of people in leadership haven't changed. He's a perfect example. He says, the best lesson is you have to change. He changed. I mean, this is a guy who never played nothing but man-to-man defense. Ended up playing zone in his later years. He always had kids who went to school for 4 years. Now they're having kids who are one and done. You know, he could have kept his old ways and said that, you know, hey, we're going to keep it this way. But no, you know what? He's living by his words of leadership. And he said that, you know, you have to change. Things are never completely fixed. Your values can remain the same. And he says that the key thing is, how do you connect your values to your change, the way you change? So, and he talked about teaching collective responsibility to the game. So to me, that right there says in a nutshell what he's about, his leadership style, because, you know, he changed through the years. He didn't just run his system and say, that's it, come hell or high water, this is what we're going to do. You know, people were shocked when the first time I ever saw him playing zone. You know, people were shocked when he started bringing in one and dones. You know, but he had to change. The game changed. I mean, the game has changed. And that's something that I've taken away from him as a leader. You have, it's just like what we talked about earlier, Mike. You know, you gotta do things different ways, man. Kids get bored. You can't teach things the same way. You know, you can teach the same skill, but do it different ways. You're gonna keep their attention. You know, that's what leadership is, and that's what changing is. And that's what, you know, you can still have your values and teach greatness, but just the way you do it, I guess. And then a couple more things here. He has some standards to live by that I wrote these down many, many years ago. And I still, you know, when I'm working with kids and teams and stuff like that, I tell them, you know, number one, never show weakness. This is number one standard. Never look tired. Number two. Number three, always show a strong face. I mean, you watch him in the game, man, his face at game time, you talk about the epitome of a strong face. Look at his face sometimes. Yep. You know, he shows a strong face. No excuses. And I know Coach Show and I talk about this all the time, that when he coached LeBron and him for the first time, they talked about standards, USA basketball standards. The first thing they said was, no excuses. We're not going to have any excuses. Okay. Number five, never have a bad practice. I mean, how great is that stuff? And then having a relentless work ethic and an unwavering fire from within. I mean, you talk about, that describes him like to a T. And I know this for a fact, that he'll come home, even like in the last couple of years, probably even today, he'll come home after a game. He'll sit up till 4 and 5 in the morning. He has his own home theater. He'll sit in his home theater 4 or 5 in the morning, breaking down film and going over that stuff. So have an unwavering fire, relentless work ethic. And then, which is built on a foundation of hard work and pride and having a sense of urgency. And I talk about this with USA Basketball when I speak, having a sense of urgency, not only as a coach, but in life and everything that you do, having a sense of urgency as a player, as a coach, as a person. They're just, man, I'm telling you, I got so much stuff. I could go through this, but I just wanted to share some of that stuff with him about him because, you know, it's just one in a lifetime, man. We're never going to see another one like that. And, you know, it's just I've been very, very fortunate to be close around him for all these years and taking so much from him and what he's done for me. I can never, you know, repay the man. Just, you know, how he's treated me and what he's taught me and how he's really helped in my development as a coach and as a person, I guess you could say.
I love all of that. And the one thing that I think stands out to me more than anything is the fact that he was adaptable and the fact that the game certainly has changed. And if you went back and you told 1996 Mike Krzyzewski that someday he'd be playing zone defense, he probably would have looked at you like you were crazy. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he would have looked at you like you were nuts. And yet here's a guy who has had more success than just about anybody in the history of the game of basketball. And he was able to learn something new, right? You can teach an old dog new tricks. And if that dog's going to be successful, you got to figure it out. You got to adapt with the times. You got to make a decision that, hey, I can't keep doing what I've always done. And it goes back to what you and I talked about earlier, that there's more than one right way to do things. There's more than one way that you can win a game. There's more than one way that you can build a program. There's lots of multiple right ways to do things. And I think in so many cases, and especially I think when we're younger, we tend to have more of a thought that, hey, I know everything. I know what I'm doing and nobody can tell me otherwise. And then I think the older you get, the more you realize that hey, I don't really know very much, and maybe I can learn from person X or person Y, and maybe I can adjust and do something different. And you start to see opportunities out there to be able to grow. And when you do, then that puts your players, your program, whatever, in the best position to have success. And I think that's a great lesson that I don't know that that Coach Krzyzewski wanted to teach that lesson, but I think anybody who studies his story certainly can get that lesson from it for sure.
Yeah. And the last two things, I got to share these last two things with you, but anyway, the one year, not too long ago before COVID, we're at the coaches meeting before camp, and he always spoke to all the coaches, and I'm sitting there with my USA basketball shirt on, and he starts to tell a story. I mean, I completely blindsided me. I'm sitting there and was like, you know, just talking about camp, and you know, all of our guys, the same guys have been there forever, still there. And he says, he looks over at me and he goes, you know, he looks right at me and he says, Joe, he says, man, I want to ask you a question. He goes, did you ever think back when you started working this camp over 25 years ago that someday you'd be working with, you know, he says, you were teaching high school in a little classroom at Carlisle High School. You were the head basketball coach. He said, did you ever think that one day you'd get the opportunity that you're getting right now to work with USA Basketball? And I was like, no, coach. I said, I'll be quite honest with you, man. I never in my wildest imagination did I ever dream I'd get the opportunities I have now. And then he went on to talk about, he said, Joe came here as a young coach. He said he wasn't here to try and network and climb the ladder. And like a lot of guys did that there. A lot of guys ended up like very, very high level jobs and stuff like that, because that's what they wanted to do. And he said, you know, you never did that. You came here and you worked hard. And he said, you worked hard where your feet were. And he said, you know, you were disciplined and you just did a great job. And he goes, that's what happened when you just made me feel really good that he really emphasized or noticed hard work, you know, and that's what it's still all about. And I talk about that all the time. Hard work does pay off. That's one thing I wanted to say. And then the last thing I'll leave you with here, you know, he talked about this every single year. He talks about only letting your people on your bus. Letting good people on your bus. And if you get on someone else's bus, make sure they're good people. So he was always very big on loyalty and letting good people on your bus. And he was very, you know, he was very loyal to people who were loyal to him. And that's, you know, and I live by that today. I'm a really big believer in loyalty. And that's why with you guys, Jason and Mike, I love coming on here because you guys were loyal to me, man. You gave me an opportunity to be on here, and I really appreciated what you guys do. And that's why I always tell you, you know, if I can ever, anything I can ever do to help you guys, man, that's what I'm here for.
Well, absolutely, Joe. That feeling is 100% mutual. We can't thank you enough for the support that you've given to our little podcast that we started back 4 years ago or so. And man, it's hard to believe that we've been able to be connected to guys like yourself who have such a huge impact on the game. And I think that last point you made about Coach K and just the relationships and the people and getting the right people on the bus. And I think about what you talked about earlier when we said, hey, what's the number one thing that you want when you bring somebody into your business or your team or whatever it is, right? You want to develop that trust. You want to have that trust that they're going to do the right thing, that they're going to represent themselves and they're going to represent you in the right way. And I think that when you think about the Duke basketball program, you think about what Coach K has stood for over the years, I think there's probably no better testimony to the success that he's had than all the people that he's had an impact on and produced over the years. And I think that really that's when you think about coaching, that's really what it boils down to. Look, you're trying to make players better, right? I'm trying to make the game better through this little podcast. But the reality is ultimately, we're getting an opportunity to use the game of basketball to be able to make people better, to make better people. And when you do that and you get to do it through the game of basketball, there is nothing better than that. And again, we can't thank you enough, Joe, for jumping on for your third try and being a part of it. And, you know, again, we feel like when I look at who's a part of the core Hoopheads family, Joe's decision is right at the top of that list without question. So again, we can't thank you enough. Before we get out, just tell people how they can connect with you, where they can find out about Unleash Potential, what you're doing, follow you. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap it up.
Yeah. So, they want to follow us, it's unleash717.com. That's our website. I'm going to give you my email here. If anybody has any questions, man, they want to hit me up or anything, feel free. My email is jstasand1@comcast.net. So they can reach me there also. My Twitter, I'm on Twitter also. Twitter is @CoachS717. So any of those things. And again, any coaches, I love helping out young coaches. I've been very fortunate. I'd love to get back to the game. And Mike and Jason, I can't thank you guys enough, man. You guys are the best, and you guys are on my bus for sure. And anything you guys need at any time, feel free to let me know. I'm always here for you guys too. So I appreciate you guys so much.
Thank you. The kind words mean a lot. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for being a part of the Hoopheads podcast audience. We really are truly appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.